Welcome to episode one of the Neutral Cider Hotel. This is just a quick note at the top to say that we had a few technical issues with the interview portion of the show, but we're looking to get it resolved going forward. We hope that you enjoy your stay.
I did knock someone out in Poland with a drumstick, so that's probably not a bad idea.
Everybody, and welcome to the Neutral Cider Hotel, the world's finest and quite possibly only third podcast. My name is Gabe Cook. I am the ciderologist. I am an international expert on cider. And did you know that I've written a book? It's called Ciderology, and it's obviously available out now to purchase. But this isn't just all about me. I've brought some friends along for the ride. First up, we've got the cider shit himself, Mr. Martin Goodwood Sharman. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm all good. I am an international amateur of cider. I just drink it, write about it. I work in the trade. I tell everyone to drink cider that should drink cider, and I try promote it as much as I can while trying not to get pissed on it as much as I do.
Well, you do a very good job on the former and a very poor job on the latter, but we thank you very much for it. Also joining us as making a triumvirate, a dream team, Mr. Grant Hutchison. How are you, my friend?
I am good, Gabe. Thank you very much. I'm here because I'm also a cider lover. My previous career or profession was hitting things with sticks. And not many people can do that, but I hit things with sticks for a living and grew to love cider because I drank it every day, and then decided to maybe make a career out of it after the hitting things passed. So now I sell it to people as best
I can. We're all very much hoping that the things that you were hitting were drums rather than small furry animals, well, but I'm sure that's absolutely fine.
We'll not
fine.
Go into that, Gabe, because the court case has not been settled yet, so...
He kept it vague on purpose.
Sorry. I didn't get the memo. No, I really didn't get the memo. Welcome, everybody. This is the Neutral Cider Hotel. As you can see, it's a lot of fun. It's a little bit bonkers, and that's the way we like things. Come and join us for the cider journey as we explore everything to do with the wonderful fermented apple. So now let's talk about some cider news. So in news this week is the same piece of news that there is every week, that Ciderology by Gabe Cook is still available to purchase. There are only 3,000 copies left. Please do purchase them so I can have my baked beans on toast tonight. But other than that, a big piece of activity is underway, which I'm involved with. It's called Discover Cider. And it is a 3-month-long campaign. It's just been launched. It's got a lovely, shiny website and great social media channels being run by the wonderful Cider George. And all it's endeavoring to do is bring together the whole UK cider industry, bigger and smaller, to champion the wonderful stories of cider. So for anybody who's interested in learning more about, you know, the different styles of cider, what different types of food to match ciders with, where the places all around the country that cider is made, check out www.discovercider.com for some fantastic videos and stories. And there's a whole heap of competitions out there. It's pretty awesome. Guys, are you fans of Discover Cider?
Yeah, I've been spamming the hashtag with my post recently. I've just been drinking, and that's not funny. That's what I've been doing. I've been posting and trying to relate it to it. I've already discovered it, so maybe it's not for me.
So what's rocking your world in terms of cider right now, then, chaps?
This week I tried some Swedish cider from a company, a cider maker called Brutes, based.
Oh.
Yep. Based just outside Stockholm. They're making wild fermented natural ciders they're trying to use as much organic fruit as they can. It's not been exclusively organic. This is their first year pressing commercially.
So they're going to be fully organic next year, but they're all about kind of, you know, using the apple, having that as the focus of the cider rather than adding anything in or using yeasts. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but these guys are focusing on the natural side of it. And I've got to say, they're pretty good at it. I tried three of their ciders, and they were all fantastic. So it might be something that we're seeing in the UK sometime in the future, but yeah, they were really good, really exciting cider maker.
Yeah, I've been following them on Instagram as well, and I'm just desperate to try it because I know it doesn't sound that important, but their labels are absolutely killer. Man, and I think the more pretty looking things, the better for cider.
That's definitely important. Like, I do think it is. People buy with their eyes before anything else, you know, and especially with ciders in a new format, in a 750ml format that maybe people aren't used to. Certainly the labels are something that people go to and are drawn to, and that totally makes sense. You've seen it in craft beer and definitely in natural wine as well. Labeling and branding and design being a kind of an important factor. So yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
And as natural wine and craft beer have kind of established themselves, a lot of people still think a lot of ciders are all craft just because they might not know enough about it. But it's good to have something visually indicate that it's in league with these kind of drinks. But,
yeah.
They look fucking gorgeous.
You're going to like it. You're going to like it. You're going to like it a lot.
Yes. Yeah. And I stupidly spent a lot of money on my birthday on cider. And I also just subscribed to the Pommelier Club, Fine Ciders, sort of experimental bi-monthly output. So I got the first box and I finally got it in July, but finally cracked it. It was six single barrel varieties, bottled singularly in a box from Tom Oliver in Herefordshire. Six wildly intense ciders. A lot of them weren't like ready to go. They would be part of a blend for him as a cider maker. And it's an eye-opening kind of way to look at how cider's made almost on that point. But one of them, I'm not even kidding, it tasted like when you're on a night out on the pills. It was...
I saw that on your Instagram.
Yeah, it was proper. Honestly, virgin, never done anything wrong, but I can imagine this is exactly what like Mandy tastes like.
Yeah, I've had that from the Tillingham Pinot Contact Quevery cider as well. My wife,
that, like paracetamol-y,
yeah,
it's really powdery.
I guess it's kind of, yeah, it's usually kind of chalky, but it certainly had a bit more of a chemical note to it that is very unique, I believe. from what I'm told, to that kind of that other drug.
I will say before we carry on talking about Mandy, after you hitting things, Grant, there are more to the ciders in that box. Like, I don't want people going, maybe I will discover cider this week with some Mandy. But with this one, it's because it's an Islay barrel, so a really smoky whiskey barrel, single variety. I believe it was Yarlington Mill, but it was acid, high acid and tannins, and all of that in your mouth just added up to this really intense thing. So for Tom, it will be about 5% of a blend of another product in the end, but it was interesting to see these sort of walking you through the barrel room.
Yeah, I feel like Yarlington Mill plus Isla is pretty bold.
Yes, right?
I mean, that's
wasn't it the Foxwell with the Isla,
or was it Foxwell?
Oh, Foxwell. Yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
They
honestly
are.
I was on pills when I was doing it, so I can't remember. I wasn't. Oh, I'm too much like David.
Disclaimer:
Brent.
Martin was not on pills. Not to be condoned.
Yeah. Not to be
drug
condoned.
Shit. Drug shit is my next Instagram handle.
What side are you drinking?
I am drinking an Ancho Rosé, because I know we'll be drinking something later from them, but I wanted to jump on the party early. The pills haven't kicked in yet, but the cider definitely has. What have you been drinking then, Gabe, down in your little castle down in Devon?
Down here at the Manor House, I've got the privilege and opportunity to be having a little sample of something from Denmark, from Cold Hand Winery. It's called Malus Ex Feminum, and it's actually a it's like a pommeau style drink. So it's a blend of some apple eau de vie mixed with some cryo concentrated apple juice. It's rather unctuous, rather lovely.
That definitely needs an explanation.
Yeah, like so, if you're discovering cider, would you start there? Like,
yeah, I've got an eau de vie with a cryo concentrated aftertaste. So
is this the first instance of whenever there needs to be something that needs to
horn.
Be?
Yeah.
Let's try this. Can you hear this? Hang on. That is the horse of knowledge. wishing to inform everybody.
Knowledge.
So yes, there we go. So whenever you hear this noise,
one of us has died.
Yeah, hopefully not me. And it means that we're going to give a bit of an explanation as to some of the more technical things that we're talking about. So an apple eau de vie is a distilled cider, basically. So a fermented cider that's gone through a distillate to make an apple spirit, a bit like a neutral vodka at this point. So that's the spirit component. And then this spirit has had some apple juice blended with it, 50-50, but not just any kind of apple juice. It's called cryo concentrated. So this is whereby the juice has been frozen so that when you then thaw the apple juice, the water component is still bound up as ice crystals, and you're left with this really, really intense, super sugar rich juice. And that's what's been added back to this eau de vie, to this spirit, to make this incredibly unctuous liqueur, almost, I suppose you'd say. So that's what I'm drinking. You'll hear more from the horse later on, I'm sure.
What's good with that is if someone's coming into this thinking of, say, they've tried Thatcher's, they've tried, might be an American equivalent of a big company cider, and they're interested and they're looking for somewhere to start. The fact that you've just gone behind the curtain, here's 1,000 leagues into the distance. It's not just cold fizzy on a summer's day. It's fucking everything's on the table here now, baby.
Yeah, we've gone, why not? Episode one.
We've gone full force.
Episode one.
Introduce myself. Okay, now.
Just easing you into the wonderful world of Cider Imperi, ladies and gentlemen, with the Neutral Cider Hotel and an impossible drink to try and describe. We hope you will enjoy. We'll try and make things a little easier as we go through, but we will be talking to you about all sorts of different types and styles of cider. And all sorts of fun news and gatherings and things as we go through. Any other fun things been happening over the last week or so since we've had a chat at all, gentlemen?
No. I grated some tiles in my bathroom.
I will digress and say it was my wife Hannah's 30th birthday, and I bought her some earrings specifically crafted by this artist called Emma Ware that she really wanted, and she lost them, and it was lost them on the day. We went wild swimming, so I had like given idea, if you're in America at the moment, this weekend gone was freezing, so me and my pale skin in the the harbour. And when we got home, she couldn't find them, and this was all weekend. I'd gone through all the stages of grief and drank a lot of cider along the way as well. And when we'd got to acceptance, I was like, it's fine, don't worry. I've got that money coming in every week, don't worry. She got loads of money to spare, famously. Cider pays loads. But she found them in the fucking box we keep garden pegs in for like pegs. Like, either she's telling me something or the Mandy that we were drinking kicked in. That's what I've been up to. I've had that stress. It's nothing to do with cider. I just needed to get it off my chest.
Been a tough week in the Goodwin Sharman household.
I'm glad you've come through that. I'm glad you've come through that.
Well,
I'm sorry we couldn't be there for you during your tough time.
Yes, I know. Yeah, again, nothing to do with anything, but just I love you, honey, and don't lose shit. Just stop losing it.
Now we are on to the big interview here at the Neutral Cider Hotel. Martin, you've invited some very special guests along this evening. Tell us a little bit more about them, please.
Yeah, so good friends with these guys. They are both absolutely lovely. They're a cider-making duo. One part is the editor of Full Juice. It's the trade magazine for cider. I believe you have something to do with that, Gabe, as well.
A little bit.
And she is the writer of The Cider Insider. And we also have the co-creator of Graftwood. It's a zine on craft cider. It brings all the art, heart, and soul of cider out with each season. And checking into the Neutral Cider Hotel then is Susanna and James Forbes of Little Pomona. Hey.
Welcome.
Welcome. Welcome to the Neutral Cider Hotel, guys. How's it going? How is Herefordshire?
Herefordshire is good. It was a little bit wet today, but kind of warm.
Yeah.
I was saying to Blair when we left the cidery, like I was in a t-shirt, and I said, remember this in a month because it will be dark, it'll be freezing cold, and we'll be soaking wet.
But not yet.
So it's a nice day.
Yes.
Yeah, but you remember Scotland, right, James? I mean, I'm still up here, so.
Yeah, true. You've got that three.
What's a t-shirt?
I mean, it's all... Exactly, yeah, I know. We shouldn't complain, but it's great.
First off, what have you guys brought to drink tonight? What are you guys on right now?
Well, naturally, we're drinking a cider made partly with quince.
Yes.
Because
that's what you do.
We're taking advantage of...
Yes, the horse of knowledge.
The horse of knowledge has just neighed, and this is the point whereby to ensure that the full range of our wonderful listeners, both of them, are aware of what is going on. To take a step back whenever we talk about something vaguely technical and just to give a little bit of an explanation, because we're going to have a range of listeners. So quince, what is a quince? First of all, for anybody who doesn't know,
well, quince is a kind of really old fruit that is typically made into jellies or kind of paste or cheese, and it's called membrillo in Spain and in South America, and you have it with cheese. But and I think also in parts of the world where it gets really ripe, then you can eat it fresh. So I know that in Chile, for example, if you're a child, you'll have slices of quince dipped in sugar because it's got quite high acid. And if you're an adult, you'll dip it in salt for different reasons. But they're the most beautiful, gnarly, bright yellow fruits. And they smell like nothing else on earth. And that's
really aromatic.
Yeah,
really
super aromatic.
Beautifully evocative.
Yeah.
And there's a fair bit of preparation you have to do if you want to bring them into your cider house, James, as you did last year.
Yeah, you've got to do a lot of crazy stuff with your quince if you want to make cider from it.
It's a palm fruit, though.
I mean, the horse is going to be neighing a lot here if we go into this.
Yeah. I really like that he did it without prefacing it. So you guys were just chatting and it just came.
But you took it totally in your stride, as if it's quite normal for...
Horses neigh all the time, and that was
I guess so, yeah.
Oh, they must be trying to mimic what Herefordshire's like on this podcast.
So at home.
Is the quince cider that you've got now yours, or is it from someone else?
It is not ours.
No, and we're probably not allowed to say exactly where it's from, except I was lucky enough to be judging a certain competition today, so I haven't done a reveal. I don't exactly know, but it was... It was one from there. So we're taking advantage. We're going around the world with our ciders. So, no, not one of ours.
It's actually really good.
Yeah, very nice.
Oh. So it's dry and it's still. So that's...
And what ciders got you into drinking cider? Like cider makers or cider? Like where did the journey begin with you two?
journey began really actually in Herefordshire, really. So it was visiting places like Brossel & Wise Cider and having a chance to chat with Mike Johnson and being taken through a range of ciders. And the first time someone actually gave me single varietals and showed me how to blend them and things like that. And then also Tom Oliver, going to see him was obviously an amazing experience, having never really understood that sort of cider with tannins and where the depth takes you. And then we also, the next year, we went to see Once Upon a Tree and Dunkerton's, didn't we, James? So,
yeah, I that first time we met Tom was in his table at his cidery, just next to the shop. There's a little room there. And back in those days, I was a wine buyer. So as a wine buyer, you always, in the wine trade, you always, when you taste stuff, you always take notes on it. It's just a habit you get into. I've lost that habit since I've started making cider, but I should probably regain it. But I've still got the notebook that I took with me, and I've still got the tasting note of the first cider I tried, and I thought, ah, this is different. I like this. It's kind of like an epiphany, really. And that was it was like his dry, still vintage 2011, I think it was, from memory.
So what was it that you thought cider was before you tried that then?
Basically, and I think maybe going back that far, if you lived in London or near London, it was kind of the stuff you would get in pubs. So it's served by the pint, it's fizzy, it's quite sweet, and kind of vaguely apple-y. So, as a being a wine bar, it was a very interesting flavor and stuff. And for me, these weren't very complex or interesting liquids, so I would never drink them. So I was not a cider drinker at all.
I think I might have had a bit more exposure because I went to university in Exeter. So quite a few cider haunts down there, including the amazing cider pub in Newton Abbot. But I guess they were definitely more quaffable ciders, more farmhousey ciders. I didn't necessarily think of cider to have on with food until maybe. Also, we went to see Simon Day, and he was several years into with Once Upon a Tree, and he'd always had this idea that cider could go with food. So, and then you began thinking, and then when we went to Dunkerton's, it was in Pembridge, and they have their cafe right by it. So again, then you can go straight away and try it, and that was so the experience was enlightening, really.
So like everything in our cider journey, it's just blind luck, really. We just we happen to meet the right people and be in the right place at the right time, and that continues to this very moment where we're on a podcast with you guys. It's like,
there you go.
It's pretty insane, really. So
And with your background as a wine buyer, does wine and that wine making, does it affect your approach of cider making? Do you make cider differently because of your past?
To a certain extent, yes, I think. And I think initially we thought that if you just took really great fruit and put it through the press and fermented it, that you'd make really great cider. And that's kind of winemaking. All the winemakers will tell you, well, all the great wines are made in the vineyard and all we do is press and ferment them. And, there is kind of something in that. But what we discovered over the last few years is that making cider is the techniques are similar, but there's a big difference between apples and grapes. And they're not chemically, they're close, but they're not the same. And just the whole process kind of differs, and the flavors are all different as well. It's just a different thing. So we may have started off thinking cider was just a wine made from apples, but it's not true. Cider is cider.
It's his own thing.
It's his own character, and
that's what we're exploring here.
But that said, I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned from not just other winemaking, but other forms of drinks making in cider making. And we do use some of those those ideas or techniques or whatever in our cider production.
What are some of those ideas and techniques that you have taken over?
I think the main
I don't want to know your secrets, but
we don't have any secrets. So fundamentally, I do believe in that that wine making adage that actually good wine is made in the orchard, and I think good cider is actually made in the orchard. So we are pretty meticulous in our fruit selection and the point at which we press the apples as well. So we're looking for full ripeness in the apples and very good quality clean fruit. And then after that, we're very clean in our processes as well. And we try and keep oxygen away from the cider at the point at which oxygen shouldn't be in contact with the cider. So, and that's not a lot different from the way a lot other cider makers, what other cider makers do and what they talk. But I think in that fruit selection, I think that's the big difference between us and a lot of other cider makers.
I can certainly vouch for that as somebody who's had the opportunity to do some picking with you, James and Susanna, and your level of you know, the grading, let's say, and the line of acceptability is quite a tough one. I've picked with a number of different cider makers, myself included, that would pick and utilize lots of fruit that you wouldn't. But maybe that's why my Perry smells of sausages. Not that we talked about that.
If only our Perry smells of sausages.
You know, the fact that you are so discerning obviously gives you a flavor profile that you need. But that is obviously quite a time-consuming, quite an expensive process as well. And this is obviously something that you probably have to, you know, account for in your time and your endeavors, but also overall pricing of a product that does start to veer considerably more towards wine, which in my humble opinion it absolutely deserves. But that is, how much of a challenge have you had in terms of reaching out to consumers and having that conversation with them about these are our products, these are how they are made, and this is the price that they are, and taking them on that journey? Because the word cider in the UK especially is synonymous generally with a lower price point. How difficult has been the journey of taking the consumers on this on along the way?
I think the key thing is letting people try the cider. Or the Perry, and I really mean that. When we've had a chance to do that, whether it's at festivals or in shops or when we've done Meet the Makers, and then when you have a chance to explain. So people have to give you a little, you know, give you the benefit of a few minutes or whatever, and then they begin to understand. And what's been really lovely since we've opened the tasting room, just a month, but people coming in and people enjoy the chance to try different things and the prices in our cidery are just the same as our ciders elsewhere. So they're not cheap. They're what it should be in our view. But no one has queried the prices, which is really great, because yes, we are nearer wine prices, you know, than anything else. So it's just a chance to speak with people and let them taste things, I think. That's key.
Yeah, I think, we're trying to make ciders with real integrity as well, and hopefully taste really good and look good as well. So I think if you get that combination right, you know, we're not trying to sell 1 million litres or 2 million litres. We're trying to sell, you know, a few thousand litres. So it's easier to find people, especially nowadays, who are interested enough in experiencing new things, that they'll get what we're doing and they'll understand it as well and be willing to part with the money to experience it. So again, I think, you know, in terms of timing, we're super lucky, because, with the craft beer, natural wine, all of, craft distilling, all of this stuff plays into sort of what we're doing.
Yeah. I think there's for me, there's too many people still in the cider world apologizing for the prices, you know, or try having to feel like they have to justify it or explain it in some way, to say, well, actually, the reason it's this much is because it's made this way. Whereas I think, as you just mentioned, the natural wine craft beer drinkers, they should, and they are generally more used to that. Do you Do you find more craft beer drinkers, more natural wine drinkers that are coming to Little Pomona? Do you have anyone that literally says, I'm a cider drinker? And
Yeah, we do.
I mean, that's something that I don't think existed for a long time, right? Well, not cider that you're making, that we would like to drink, you know? What's the audience that are coming in?
You're absolutely right. The natural wine drinker and the craft beer drinker, it's really fun chatting with them because they're open to flavors and they do appreciate the craft. But also it's been lovely. Cider drinkers have been traveling to see us. We had someone last week. They'd driven 2 hours from Nottingham just for the sort of evening, wow, you know, to be there. Mm. So that's really lovely. But, I mean, I guess – obviously, we're still having some difficult conversations, maybe with some gatekeepers, some buyers who have yet to understand the value and the interests. And I think that's the thing that's changing, really. I really do. I think, but I think we have to ask consumers to help us get it changed, to keep asking, so that the buyers know there's a need.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I mean, I think cider at its best tastes as good as any other drink, and you know,
absolutely.
And the sort of processes that go into our ciders are as exacting as any of the great, you know, be it brewers or great winemakers. Maybe not. You know, I'm getting above myself, but you know, it's getting up there with those sort of standards. So, you know, all of this takes time and effort, and that equates to money. So if we want to build a business that is sustainable in the long term and can employ people and pay people well and pay growers well, that whole chain, we need to be charging, you know, a reasonable sum for our products. Otherwise, it's not sustainable.
It's not sustainable. I think that's how
have you built it then? How did you go from, you know, so year one, year two, year three, you know, what were the steps that you took to get from, you know, making when you thought you just had to ferment apples to get to the point now where it's a craft and it's a skill?
Well, I mean, I think we approached it very seriously. We did something that probably very few people starting to make cider do. We had a business plan.
Oh, yeah. What? Whoa.
Which very quickly went out the window because in that business plan, we decided that we'd make cider 1 year, and in the 12 months following that harvest, we would sell 50% of that cider. But of course, come the next harvest, none of the ciders that we made were ready. So it was like 18 months after first pressing apples that we released our first cider. So we very quickly ran out of space in our little barn. So the business plan went
yes.
But the point is that we took it kind of seriously to begin with. And it was a kind of proof of concept, if we can. Gabe will remember some of our first releases, and you will as well, Martin. They were not for the faint-hearted. They were kind of bracing liquids. They were
robust, I think is the word, robust.
Yeah. But, you know, we sold it all fairly easily thanks to people like Felix at the Fine Cider Company and others. So it gave us a kind of confidence that, you know, we could make cider, and we could then try and make better cider and different ciders.
Yeah, we were still, you know, also doing other jobs to feed into the business and stuff, and that's kind of stopped now as we try and grow. And we've been able to take advantage of lovely opportunities, like when Gabe introduced us to a Perry orchard. You know, so that was a whole new beginning, a whole new journey, and we're really excited to
the horse.
Thank you. Sorry, I lost the horse for a second.
I thought you were just texting.
I came back. I was texting. Sorry, the horse of doom, joy. I forgot what the horse is.
Encompasses all.
the horse is neighed. Actually, just to recognise Perry, which although is something that we're all big fans of, and we know and enjoy. Even the term Perry in the UK isn't super widely known, and certainly for our legions of fans who are listening all across the world might not have a clue what Perry is. Give us in a nutshell, guys, if you will, what Perry is.
Me? That one. Yeah, thanks. That way.
Well, we're not experts in Perry, although we do love it. But Perry pears are Perry pears are a type of pear. So, and a type of pear you wouldn't generally eat because they either have crazy tannins, crazily astringent flavors, or they're crazily acidic, or both. They also have a kind of whole range of other flavors and aromatics that you don't get in other fruits, I don't think. Mm-hmm. And they're famously and fabulously long-lived trees as well. So that orchard you introduced us to, I think, dates back to the late 18th century when it was planted. And those trees are, some of them are huge, and they're still producing in some years, like loads and tons of fruit. It's amazing. But they've got wonderfully evocative names, and Gabe, you know all these names really well. But things like Dead Boy and Gin and Butts, and, you know,
Dead Boy,
Legs, Dead Boy,
yeah, Dead Boy, Kill Boy, Merry Legs,
Merry Legs,
Stinking Bitcher,
Stinking Bitcher,
Startle Cock, all the good names.
You want to dig up those trees?
Some great single varieties.
And I tell you what, we, because of Gabe, you know, we started making Perry, and it's super challenging to make. It reminds me of grapes in that you have this, you know, anyone listening will know a pear is basically green and rock hard, and then the next stage of ripeness is it's mush, brown mush. And it's the same with Perry pears. They're fickle things, and you have to get them and press them at just the right time. So that's a challenge in itself.
I would add in that if anyone hasn't had the chance to try a good Perry, you have to seek it out. Yeah. This is the most sublime experience, and it's one of those things which once you try them, then you're forever seeking that opportunity again. They're really food friendly with different dishes. There's real variety and complexity of flavour.
You're right that no one knows what Perry is.
Well, yeah, it's probably important to say not to seek out a pear cider, as you would, as you think a pear cider is. Certainly, it's sold as in this country, because that's not really what we're talking about, you know.
Look for the word Perry, and you'll be all right. But
Perry's the key word.
Yeah, and it's possibly a tragedy in the wings, really, because there's not that many Perry pear trees in the UK. I don't know that many people are planting Perry pear trees seriously. So it's a kind of...
We have to rescue
it. It's in a precarious situation, Perry. So
yeah.
anything that we can do to help promote it, and I think by making it and having the opportunity via our tasting room to let people taste it,
Just for the horse's benefit, to clarify that this wonderful drink, Perry, is a fermented pear drink made from these very specific varieties of pear grown for the sole purpose of making this drink in a sort of very regional UK context, and a little bit in northern France and in parts of central Europe too. You can make a drink with dessert pears as well. That makes this quite a sort of, you know, a much gentler and softer and probably less complex kind of drink too. And also in the US, the term pear cider means something slightly different. Again, in the US, it means a fermented apple juice, a cider with pear added as a flavoring. So, you know, this is one of the myriad occasions whereby there's differences in terminology all around the world to try and to describe things. And, you know, you'll hear me frequently banging on about in person, or indeed in my book Ciderology, available now, which talks about, you know, the language and lexicon and stylization. And in fact, in Ciderology by Gabe Cook, available now, there are pictures of the both of you picking pears on your very first time. I do believe you were gathering a lot of butt on that particular occasion,
the interesting thing is a lot of Perry pears, for example, gin pear is so called because it smells of juniper, and it tastes of juniper and herbs. And brandy has got a kind of brandy-esque kind of quality to it. Well, fortunately, Butt doesn't actually live up to it.
You obviously haven't tried one of my perries before then. Yeah. So, we do try and avoid this at all costs.
Yeah, they're good.
Yeah.
Going back to the old books front there and jumping off of Gabe, I believe you've written a book, Susanna, called The Cider Insider, and it has a list, a good collection of ciders and perries to try. Is there any perry in there that you would recommend someone on their journey beginning would discover perry with?
There's a couple of really great ones and great people to try. I would, Tom Oliver always does a good perry, but also the Ross cider, their perries are wonderful. And there's such a knowledge. I mean, I think they have about 60 different perry trees there. And I think they, you know, you ask them, I remember asking him about the actual tree, and he said, oh, I'll just go and have a look at it. So they know the trees intimately and they're into rescuing them. If you're going a little bit further afield, if you get a chance to try Eric Bordelais's Poiré Granite, that's a really, really, really fun one. And what I might do, there's a couple in America that we really liked. I need to just look up the one Black, we went to see. Black Duck. Thank you, James. It's luckily James can remember these. Black Duck, amazing perry that we had there.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the very first perries I tried was the Poiré Granite from Eric Bordelais. And that's just like that vintage, I think it was 2013 or something. It was like an astonishing liquid. That vintage was 3.5% alcohol.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't believe the kind of complexity and intensity of flavor that you would get in a liquid with that sort of alcohol level. It was incredible.
And
it's the real... I'm sorry.
I was going to say, all these perries that you've mentioned as well, you've got some from Herefordshire, Normandy in America, but how does the region affect the drink as well, like where the fruit's grown?
I think...
Well, there's the old story about you having to grow perry pears within sight of May Hill, which Gabe recounts very amusingly and often. But I don't know. You've been the one.
I think actually, I always think terroir includes the culture of the maker as well. And if we include within that the approach, then what I found, for example, when we went to Black Duck, is it Black Duck?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He has exactly the same attention to detail and desire just to let the fruit speak. So that, for me, overrides the difference in terroir in terms of that gives you the intensity and the complexity. I mean, sure enough, if we were comparing the same fruit in different places, then when it is riper, then there's more potential alcohol. So you will see that. And we saw that in Kingston Black. I think the horse of knowledge might start neighing again on that one. But we had the opportunity for a horizontal of Kingston Black, which Darlene Hayes did at Ross Cider last year. And that included Kingston Black, this wonderful single varietal from the UK, but also from California. And yes, you did see real difference in there. And that was more due to the weather, the climatic difference.
I would like to sort of move the conversation from what's inside the bottle to what's on the outside of the bottle, because I know that you're both really interested. Both very creative people. I can see some wonderful artwork behind you, and I'm sure that all of you listening can see that artwork as well. And bright labels and great design. You know, it's more than just the label. You're really trying to communicate something very, very different every time. What's your approach to branding?
I think when we looked at cider back in 2014-15, it seemed to me that every cider label was really, really horrible, and I couldn't see who it would actually appeal to. So we wanted to do something that would kind of appeal, I think, really to it wouldn't alienate existing cider drinkers, but would appeal to craft beer drinkers and would also appeal to some wine drinkers. So that was kind of the genesis of things, really. We wanted to try and bring people into the cider category and present things slightly differently to do that. Because like I spoke about that first, that epiphany cider with Tom Oliver, it had a label on it that I think he probably printed off from his computer in the office. You know, it's like,
yeah.
Obviously, he's improved a lot since then, but it was terrible. Like, no one, you had this liquid gold, and no one would ever, you know, unless you were a hardcore cider drinker, you wouldn't be buying that.
When I ran a bottle shop, I had a lot of Tom stuff because it's amazing, but I had to apologize so much just for the labeling to so many customers and be like, no, please just I'd crack bottles so they could try it, because the label, judging a book by a cover, the label did not do the insides justice. But you guys really have brought that, and the right. Do It Puritan is one that's like a stunner inside and out.
Very good.
Thank you.
You have sort of two prominent characters, I suppose, is the best way to say, through your myriad different bottles. You have the eponymous little Pomona, a younger woman, and then we have this other character who does scare me slightly. I am going to say he's sort of the it kind of figure, especially with your wonderful new table cider. I think is my favorite cider that you that you've ever made.
Wow.
But we're at a wonderful, you know, gingham sort of tablecloth table. Our little Pomona is sat down with this dude. I'm assuming they are male. I don't know that.
I don't know. I've never seen him below the waist.
Who is this character? And what do they signify? I'm a bit scared, please.
I don't know, because he first appeared on our keg project, which was Root and Branch. And this was the idea behind calling it Root and Branch was it was to rip up the idea of what keg cider was and do something different. So. And we wanted something just completely different from Little Pomona, because we weren't using wild yeasts, and we were doing a few other things which we weren't doing in our estate cider, so to speak. So we wanted something completely different. But in table cider, the reason we did table cider was to kind of celebrate the kind of true conviviality of cider. And it seemed to me that in the world of cider, you get these beautiful people and you get these kind of strange characters who come in, and so to bring that family of people together on the label was what we're trying to do, because that's the great thing about cider, it's a drink for everyone, really.
Racking my brains for the beautiful people right here.
Well, I mean
yeah, I think Susanna, definitely got more of the latter on this call here, so let's be elsewhere.
I think
it's a very convivial drink, and it's
yeah, it's the community, so. It's yeah. The thing, and I think going back to the initial genesis of Pomona or Little Pomona, because we are little, what we wanted, the traditional images of Pomona, the goddess of the orchard, are from the sort of the best known ones are from the late 19th century, and it's just sort of willowy females who you really don't think they would be able to, you know, handle a harvest or, you know, ward off evil spirits or anything like that. So we wanted a feisty person, because you've got to be that to look after your trees and everything like that. And what's fun is I love it when I'm at the tasting room and people are bringing in the kids, and you can see that the young girls as well as the young boys looking into the cidery window and wondering how it's all happening. And then you begin to think, well, that's what we could do here in the UK. We can inspire the next generation. Mm. And so actually it's really fun to see Pomona kind of reaching out in that way.
Yeah.
Well, you also run a sort of group called Cider Women as well, Susanna.
Yes.
Which I'd be interested in hearing more about. I'm sure everyone else would as well.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Thank you very much. Yes, we began that. I'm one of seven founders, and I'm the co-chair with Elizabeth Pimlet of the Museum of Cider here in Hereford. And it's for all women in cider, so in all aspects, whether you're a grower, an orchardist, whether you serve it, sell it, or whether you're just interested. And it's just a nice space where we can share stories and everything, but also where we can learn, where we can become more empowered. And I think that's got to be one of the ways forward. Sometimes us women, we're too diffident and we don't put ourselves out there. We don't learn enough, and therefore we don't always, we're not always in a position to take up opportunities when they arise. So I hope this group, which actually, because it's a Facebook group, has got membership, you know, it throughout Europe and a bit in the States. And again, I would, I'd like to, you know, say thank you to Pom Boots over in the States for encouraging us and helping us in the early days.
Because from a consumer perspective, cider is actually, it's very equal in terms of the demographic of male and female in terms of drink cider. Certainly much more equal than with beer. And without having any actual empirical data, I very much suspect that it's a lot more equal than it is for wine as well. But that doesn't necessarily, from a UK context, that doesn't translate quite so much over into the production of this drink, although in terms of numbers of people, although there are some real key individuals, and certainly have been for me in terms of my cider journey. Helen Thomas, off the top of my head, still managing director of Weston since 1996, granddaughter of the founder, Henry Weston. You know, she's been a massive influence over the UK cider industry. The chief executive of the National Association of Cider Makers, the UK industry body, is Fidelia Tyler, you know, industry stalwart for sort of 35 plus years. So it's an area that definitely needs more celebration and more support, and that's precisely what Cider Room is doing. What gives me some great sort of excitement and sort of faith that this is a drink, this is an industry that is welcoming and open for all, as to what's happening in the USA, certainly in the Pacific Northwest region of the US. 50% of the people involved in the production of cider, from fruit to packaging, are women, which is absolutely sort of incredible. And so I very much hope that some of that starts to translate over towards this side of the pond a little bit more.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. That's exactly the sort of thing we'd like to see here. And when you do go to a conference like we had at CraftCon, the majority of actual makers will be men. So what we need to do is raise the profile and make it more visible that women are involved and can get involved, but then also enable those who are there to learn more. So to share news, really.
Yep.
2020 has obviously been a challenging year for everybody, and you as cider makers have obviously not been immune to that. So on a positive note, for the rest of this year, what events or ciders or things are making you smile and you know, you're really looking forward to?
Well, I'm really excited to be part of the Discover Cider campaign. I'm so excited that it's on for a few months. So we've got a couple of ideas. We're obviously going to keep going through harvest with the tasting room, hopefully on Saturdays if we can, providing we don't fall over or anything like that. But and that's giving people a chance to kind of see how things are going. But also we've got two other ideas we want to do. One is the Art of Cider, and that's to bring together photos, poetry, and performance. So since we've been at the cidery, people have come and found us, which has been amazing. And Mabel wants to say hello. Mabel's sorry. Mabel's here. Joining in here. So people have come and found us. We've got this lovely lady who's come in and read poetry to us, hasn't she?
Mm.
And then not only have artisan bakers and brewers come to see us, but also we've had musicians, and they've been telling us about, so we had Joe Emmett of the Kilpex. He came along with the mayor of Hereford one day, and he shared with us the first rendition of their new cider song. Mm. So, and he's talking about another song as well. So we want to do that and do that with our local town, with Bromyard, and so bring people in. And then there's one other thing, which is a little bit different, but, you know, maybe some of your listeners will want to come along. Martin of Butford Organics nearby his idea is we have one day, which is the cider press day. So people can join and go to see four different cider makers on one day on a little schedule, and we'll each, you know, welcome them for about an hour or something like that. So we want to carry on sharing the sort of journey with other people.
Yeah, absolutely.
And all of the information regarding that potential tour and things is available, obviously, at your own website, littlepomona.com. And discoversider.com as well. All details can be found there.
So what I can say is we were out, Blair and I were out looking at some orchards today, and like there's amazing crop of fruit on some of these trees and amazing quality fruit. So we're very excited to be about to start pressing and making cider seriously in 2020.
And can I mention one cider that's sort of soon to be released? Kingston? Oh, wow. Kingston Black will be in the same series as the Egremont was. So it's a really complex, beautiful, again, a small batch. But James, tell us why we like that one.
You mentioned Darlene's Kingston Black tasting, so it's slightly inspired by that tasting. And people revere this apple and think of it as the king of cider apples, so we were keen to get hold of some fruit and to press it. And so we did. We gave it the full works. We pressed free-run juice into a fine, fine ex-burgundy barrel, white burgundy, and let it ferment wild and then stuck it in the bottle. So it's about ready to release, and it tastes great. Mm. It's really delicious.
That's it.
That I want that. That's all I can.
Yes,
say.
I want that too.
We want that.
Good.
Me too.
Even got a touch of sweet.
Yeah. Well, guys, I think that's pretty much covered the universe of cider in a pretty short space of time. Cider is obviously something that, you know, compared to some cider makers, is relatively new, but certainly in the time that you've been involved with cider, your level of experimentation and intrigue and taking people on a journey from the bottle inside and out has been amazing. And we're all very, very grateful that you're doing your thing and making cider. And the horse is very, very happy as well that you came along. That wasn't a quest for knowledge. That was just pure love. So we thank you all very much for coming down.
Thanks for having us on, guys.
Thank you very much. Yeah,
well done.
We like the Neutral Cider Hotel. Yep. Yeah, we'll definitely check in there.
You just been upgraded to your penthouse suite. Yeah, penthouse suite. It's all yours. On us for the night. Go wild. Fantastic. No TVs out the window, though, okay? That's all I can say.
There is a horse that neighs in the garden all night, though, that we will be taking to the glue factory soon.
Surely not. What a way to end.
The only vegan in the group just shitting on horses.
But you're not the only vegan in the group.
No, really?
No, you're not. Hey!
But you don't always go on about it.
So I've never shit on a horse. I bought a vegan sausage roll off your wife at Cider Salon. Yeah. I had to PayPal her £1.
Really?
Yeah.
I like that.
For some reason she had like five or six.
Got to pile up on him, mate. Yeah. We started
absolutely
early.
Yeah.
Still ended late. Anyway, we'll end on that. Guys.
And on that,
guys, thank you.
Thank you so much. It's good to see
you. Thanks a lot. Take it easy.
Have fun.
Thanks, Susanna. Little Pomona, Wassail, thank you. Safe journey, safe harbour. All the best.
Thank you.
Cheers, guys. Bye.
Okay, so now it's time for our cider of the week. We've got something a little bit special, something from outside of the UK. Grant, tell us, what are we drinking today?
Today, Gabe and Martin, we are drinking a cider from a US-based maker called Ancho. This is A-N-X-O, based in Washington, D.C. So they're a city cidery, I guess you would say, as opposed to maybe an orchard-based cidery where they might grow the apples, process the apples, on an orchard or a farm. These guys are based in Washington DC, and they purchase their fruit from farmers, well, far and wide, depending on what cider it is that they're making. This one that we're drinking is their Cidre Blanc, it's called, so white cider, or as you might call it in the UK, or I don't know if this is just a Scottish thing, but onion cider. You guys hear that?
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's...
Welcome to onion cider.
This is very different
from... And throw an onion.
Very different from onion cider. So this is their dry cider. It's presented in a can, as you can hear from my co-host's beautiful coordinated opening there. And these guys make bone dry cider, so they ferment the cider down to dry without adding any water or sugar or any additives, and they generally use wine yeasts or native yeasts, and this one is a wine yeast, and it's been fermented in stainless steel. It's got a kind of light carbonation to it, and the apples have come from four different orchards, all within 150-mile radius of the cidery. So, and it's a single variety, Gold Rush apple variety. Gorgeous. Cider. So,
boom. Yeah. Well, it's. I mean, here at the Neutral Cider Hotel, we look after each other, and there's obviously considerable amounts of nepotism, apart from the fact that this Cidre Blanc is one of the ciders featured in Ciderology by Gabe Cook, available now. Grant, you're in fact the distributor of the cider in the UK, so you know this product intimately. Well done. But it's a great cider, because let's be fair, it looks absolutely banging. It's a great can, it's a great presentation. It's bold contemporary packaging, which just helps to try and sell it into a particular kind of demographic. And when you pour it out, it is completely different from, let's say, a classic West Country style cider. Well, guess what? It's because it's not from the West Country. And it's utilizing these more sort of, we'd say it's more of an acid driven apple. But it's not just about, that's like a zingy sort of Granny Smith acidity. This has got some texture to it. You can't see, dear listeners, that it's a hazy product, and so that I think the fact that it's not been filtered is giving some real sort of texture in there. But given that it is bone dry, and it is bone dry, it's still got loads of like character to it, and it's not thin, it's not challenging. I think it's a really cool cider. It's something that's good, that adds a lot more to the category, and is going to appeal to people that I think maybe don't necessarily drink cider currently.
What's really nice with it as well, that the carbonation just seems bang on and gives it that texture, amplifies it. Like when I'm drinking it, my mouth is tingling without bracing acidity, and I keep chasing that kind of flavor again and again. And if I had that chilled down in a koozie, barbecue, park, anything... Fuck it, I don't care. Fuck it.
How many koozies are you chilling in these days, man?
Well, as a man in Bristol with fair skin, I'm not allowed outside for sunburn reasons.
That's so not why I will outside. Just
be in a cold shower drinking. No, it's one of those where that on a hot day, I could plow that. Infinitely, that would be too many cans in a go, kind of thing.
Yeah, and especially because I didn't mention this, it comes in at 6.9%. You know, I don't think it tastes like that. Like you say, I think you could certainly, you know, sitting having a barbecue or sitting in the park or sitting outside on a nice hot day, you could easily smash a few cans of this and not be aware that you've just basically had a few bottles of wine, you know, maybe not quite, but yeah, it's gets that kind of, like you were saying, Martin, that chasing, you keep going back to this sort of lemony, sherbet-y, sweetie thing that's really just enticing and beautiful.
What's good is it sounds almost like a kind of like a backhanded compliment when you're like, oh, I could just enjoy this all day. It sounds like it isn't technical complex or anything like that.
Yeah.
But the aroma is like, it's kind of it's like green apple skins, but a little bit pineapple. It's juicy. And then the dry character, it isn't super sweet and coats the tongue. It's dry, refreshing, clean. And I'm trying not to sip it as much because I know it'll be empty in a second if I drink it like my mind wants to.
The equivalent, from a beer context, is a brilliant and really really well made lager for anybody who is UK based. Keller Pils by Lost and Grounded, just an absolute. Classic modern sort of UK lager style is okay. It's not going to have the insanity and the bonkersness, but it does exactly what it's supposed to do really, really well. And it's just fabulously enjoyable. And is the right drink on so many occasions. I also really like the fact of the information that it gives. It gives the apple variety. It tells you like where it's being sourced from. It's telling you about the yeast strains that are being utilized. And, you know, in the UK, you're a wild fermenter or you're not. And, you know, most people larger or even cider makers that are utilizing cultured yeasts are utilizing a champagne yeast, and they don't want to give, there isn't any impetus for them to give more information than that. And it always surprises me and frustrates me that they don't give the consumer more information for them to be enthused, to get involved, and for them to be make more sort of discerning decisions about it. So I love the fact that they put all this information on the can.
That seems to be a kind of American thing, right? I mean, I see a lot more American cider makers labeling with varieties, you know, even as going as far as residual sugars and pH levels and things. And I don't know where that comes from. Why that wouldn't be a thing in the UK? Is it a kind of secretive thing? Is it, you know?
I personally think it's because the really strong, bold emergence of, let's say, a craft cider market, or even just cider market full stop in the USA. Has been really heavily influenced and driven over the course of the last 10 years from the craft beer movement, which is all about innovation, playfulness, try anything, give the consumer as much information, be proud about what goes in there and how you do it. And that those discerning drinkers want to know this. They're curious about how these different drinks are made. In a UK context, we've had a wonderful emergence of a craft beer and of beers that are made with sort of skill, care, attention, a range of sort of interesting raw materials kind of put in there. But that hasn't necessarily translated over into ciders. And a lot of cider makers, especially those on a more of a on a traditional bent of things, yes, they might be talking about the apple variety or varieties that go in there, but then they don't seem to necessarily always understand that the consumer might want to know more. And it's almost a bit more sort of mystical rather than informative. And it's, you know, there are some producers who are starting to change that. Pulped, they're definitely, you know, some folk who are definitely trying to introduce more information. And Little Pomona, who we've been talking to today as well, they're really, really strong about saying what's in their product and how they've made it. So there are some sort of changes happening, I think.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that cider suffers from compared to certainly wine and beer as well, is a universal language or even just some universal terminology that translates all around the world for whatever bottle it is you have. You know, a bottle of wine, the grape varietal is on the label on the front. That's why you pick it. That's not the case with cider at the moment, anyway. But
not yet.
But it's very similar. You know, as we were talking with James and Susanna there about the qualities and the characteristics that cider apples or apples that make cider have, Hopefully, I'm hopeful that one day it'll get to a point where that's something that you can discuss, you know, not just with other geeks, but with anyone that drinks cider.
Most people in the UK wouldn't very readily associate cider with being something that's made in the USA. Beer, obviously, and you know, on specifically on the more on the West Coast in terms of wine as well. But cider's really kind of, you know, grown in volume over the course of the last 10 years. It's quite an exciting place, isn't it, Grant? There's lots of things going on there
in the US.
Yeah,
definitely. But it's been. They kind of really grasped the movement, I guess, and really ran with it. And I think you mentioned the key word earlier, which is innovation. And I think that in comparison to the UK, their lack of history and heritage almost with cider making has sort of allowed a lot of cider makers that freedom to do more with the cider that they're making without being judged for it or looked down on with traditional cider makers, which I think is maybe something that certainly a few years ago the UK market would be guilty of doing. It is just happening less now, I think, with, as we said, with makers like Little Pomona and but yeah, the US they've just kind of, you know, I guess like they did with craft beer. Martin, you'll know more about the sort of beer side of of things and how that happened in terms of craft beer, but they seem to be a bit more freedom in the US to mess with it.
Well, their experimentation is born out of passion from drinking, like with ales. It was about drinking the trad beers of like Best Bitters and that from breweries in the UK, old family breweries doing really good classic styles. Mm-hmm. And they took it back and retweaked it with their hops, which with the Tuar gives them big juicy characteristics that we couldn't get in our IPAs because of the hops that grow here. Don't express those characters. And then that snowballed and got big. And they have sort of per person, per capita, more square footage to start small things. Like if you're going to brew in your shed in America, chances are it's better than brewing in your shed in the UK if you're sharing a flat. Yeah. So it's born out of the passion from taking what's the UK had over there, and then 30 years we've taken that back and been inspired by it. But with cider, it's almost like talking about the technique and everything. When we say like West Country, that doesn't necessarily mean like varieties and everything, it's just the technique. And it's just trying to it'll be a long way before we get people that are on the beginning of their cider journey to understand the whole scope and everything that cider has to offer.
And so now, dear listeners, we're on to our Ask the Experts section of the show. We haven't found the experts, obviously, so the three of us are going to have to make do. We've asked on social media for people to ask us questions, cider related or otherwise, to see what we've got. And I've had three responses to my post. My favorite being, why does my neighbor always stand outside my house at 1:30 a.m. in the dark, waving up to me in my window, using only his fingers and palm in an almost finger Mexican wave-esque motion?
And that's from Ben.panel.3. That was from
Ben. I'm not sure that my extensive level of cider experience is going to be able to help you here. But maybe if you have a look, if you have a little read of Ciderology by Gabe Cook out now, you might be able to find a couple of little nuggets in there that might be able to assist you on the way. Otherwise, please stay away. Thank you very much. Has anybody else got anything slightly more cider related that we could get our teeth into?
Yeah, I got one here. It's on your post, Gabe, where you said, if there was just one question you could ask Cider Gurus, Cider Shit, and Grant, what would it be? And Cider Buzz MCR said, when? So to answer that question, then is the answer. And that's my question this week.
Do you think it's that cider people are just like, you know, wonderfully esoteric or just very particular about timings? What do we think?
I think it's that you didn't include a timing or format in that question. It just says anything you need to know. Someone's gone, hang on. And you've gone, well, rather I've gone, yeah, that'll be good. What's good is he's a really knowledgeable.
He's more knowledgeable about cider than the three of us put together. Yeah. He's just toying with us. We're just his little puppets.
Sounds cheers. Like he's. Cheers, you can't read it, but like it sounds like he's rolling up his sleeves for a fight. Like when? Like outside the school.
I wouldn't want to have a fight with him.
I wouldn't fight. I wouldn't fight Dick. No.
I no, would, definitely. But I'd lose, and I'm comfortable with that. No,
that's good because the reason I wouldn't fight him is for fear of damaging my masculinity. No,
like I might kill him. I'm just really strong.
I mean, if I no.
Grant is the one person who actually has people who follows him and who actually generally cares about him. You put out a post. Did you get any response?
I got a lot of responses actually, Gabe. Yeah, thanks for asking. I've got a lot of followers, so I think that probably the most interesting one, and this is actually going to be cider related, and maybe something we can have a small conversation on. Cidra Cidrada from Portugal, cider maker, asked, "What is the perfect glass to drink cider from? Do shape and thickness matter?" I don't know if the second question is related to something else, but
pertaining to the glassware.
Do you have a particular shape and thickness that you you go for each time you sip on a cider, or is there a specific glass that you go to? Does it change for style, or do you just bung it in whatever you've got lying around, Gabe?
I think in the ideal context, yes, it absolutely depends upon the style of cider, and I can mean that in just in terms of whether we're talking something that's like really really bold and tannic, or whether it's something that's a bit more like this wonderful Cidre Blanc from Antro that we've been having tonight, that's a little more sort of acid driven. You know, you can take a lot of cues from other drinks. So if your drink is like really really effervescent, sparkling, bright and lively, you might be wanting to have something that something slightly taller, a glassware where it really sort of accentuates the aromatics and sort of it's scored on the bottom, so you really get a lot of fizz kind of coming out of it. There is also a question around temperature as well. So in terms of the, you know, the thickness of the glassware, I would say that with more of the sort of classic West Country style ciders or any cider made around the world that is more of a predominance of tannin, whether that be from Northern France too, actually having something that is a little thicker might not be such a bad thing in terms of helping to get the temperature just right, not too cold in there, and it'll sort of help to sort of insulate it and maybe sort of keep it in. The French use the bolle, like a ceramic bowl, and certainly where I'm from in the Shire, the old two-handled sort of stoneware mug is the classic kind of drink. Maybe actually I've got it completely wrong. It's to keep it cool when there wasn't the opportunity to chill things down sort of easily, not wanting to have it sort of too warm. So, you know, glassware type and style is something that cider hasn't really got to grips with yet. I didn't even cover it in Ciderology by Gabe Cook, available now. So this is how on point and topical it is.
That's how little it matters in the world of cider.
No, I think it does matter. And you know, this question wasn't even being asked at all 5 years ago. It's being asked quite a lot now, and so that's cool. And you know, there are no like official answers, because you know we're trying to find answers to questions that are being asked right now. You know, in terms of particular styles of beer, especially, you know, the types of glassware have been associated with these styles over the course of hundreds of years. You know, we're talking a few years, and so it's starting and it's moving. And the most important thing is that the conversations are happening, which is basically a cop out answer for I don't really know.
I've found it's almost like an aesthetic choice. So if someone's trying to make cider look classier, they'll use stemmed glassware and have it like that. But I like right now I'm drinking the Ancho out of a bowl branded with Little Pomona.
Me too.
And I know. So I know.
Am I not in the club?
Yeah, there you go.
Are you in the club? There is a club.
You didn't write the book on this glassware, Gabe, so get out. But for me, it's like that me says that you should be holding it. There's no stem for you to place your hand on to keep the liquid cold. So this drink shouldn't really be in it in that it should be drank cold and quick. But I drink it quick enough that I'm not going to warm it up. So it's just a glass that I enjoy drinking out of and that feels nice. But a lot of beer drinkers moving into it, you pretty much can't go wrong if you've got a teku because you've got a bowl and a stem. So if you want to keep it cool.
Hang on.
Can you use the disgruntled girl? Do the disgusted girl. So that's the craft beer disgusted girl sound. So a teku is a German manufactured glass for craft beer. It's a it's almost a bowl with a tapered like a tuliped out lip to throw the aroma of hops, etc. It's gorgeously branded so that you think it's super important and it makes your hoppy liquid smell even hoppier. I'm sure it does in some level, but to us, the casual drinker of it, it's almost of irrelevance. It's like the kind of joining in. And I think that with cider as well. Like if you enjoy drinking champagne style, like traditional sparkling style ciders in a boot, you be my fucking guest. You, as long as you're buying it and you're supporting it, do whatever you enjoy. I just enjoy ones out of stems if I'm trying to keep them cool, or if they're big tonic ones, bowls that I can kind of swill them around in, let breathe and slowly take my time with.
Yeah, a boot for all of our non-UK listeners is a shoe.
I meant the back of a car. I meant
did you mean the back
quantities.
Of a car?
And
if you said a trunk, yeah, we would then need to clarify that it wasn't an elephant's trunk who had drank cider also, and then was shooting it into your mouth.
Now I've changed my mind. I meant boot the pharmacy chain in the UK. So I want a full shop. No. I just meant drink out. You know what? That answer works for all of it. Whatever the fuck you want to drink it out of.
Yeah. I think that's true. I think that's the right approach to have. It's just, you know, I would personally drink this out of the can. I probably wouldn't decant this Ancho that we're drinking.
I think would you not say, it might be Liberty's grant, but would you not say the guys who made this would have wanted you to stab it here and then crack the top and just skull it?
Yes, definitely.
That's by design.
Again, we can't condone that either.
please drink responsibly, people.
Drink responsibly.
Drink whatever you like. Drink whatever quantities you like. Just keep paying for cider and keep this machine moving before we all die.
Thank you, Martin. Were there any final questions that come in from people
that
who like you,
final
Grant?
Enough.
No.
I'll tell you what. Just quickly, another one was from Nancy Kidner. She said, Yorkshire cider, not in your book. That's Gabe. That's the Ciderologist, the book available now.
Ciderology, says, Martin. Ciderology.
It's a made-up word.
Have you not heard it say enough? I mean, I'm being particularly crass here. Come on.
I tune out. So it says, recommendations, please, on Yorkshire cider.
There's a few, actually. Thornborough cider in North Yorkshire. They're really, really good. They do some nice wild ferment, in-bottle fermented stuff, some 750 mils and some 330 mil. Really nice. I went to visit them a couple of years ago en route up to Yorkshire Dales, up to Swaledale. You've also got Coleman cider in East Yorkshire, and you got Udder's Orchard from Huddersfield. It's amazing, you know, that apples do grow north of Birmingham, apparently. Who knew? And so there are some brilliant ciders being, this is the great thing. I don't know. I think it was the Discovery cider from which Discovery being the apple variety.
I was going to say, we've heard that a lot this evening, Discovery.
There's been a lot of Discovery. It's definitely the word of the year. The Discovery cider from Udder's Orchard, I think I tasted it at the Manchester sort of Camera Beer and Cider Festival a couple of years ago. It was just absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. So aromatic, so fruity, so floral, so tasty. It was pretty dry. Brilliant. This is the great thing. So about cider, certainly from a UK context, is that, you know, we've been speaking to James and Susanna, who've got access to classic sort of, you know, tannic cabinets and the Arlington Mills and things like that. But in places within the UK that aren't normally classically associated with cider, like Yorkshire, for example, there are now people who are making absolutely exquisite drinks. And it's a really, really exciting time.
Yay.
There we go.
Cool.
All right. Well, there we go. Yeah, cool. So, there we go. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning into the Neutral Cider Hotel. We invite you to, you know, check out and get out. We've got to, you know, change the bed sheets and wait for the next bunch of people to come in. I'm wondering how far we can push this hotel analogy. I reckon another episode or two, certainly. So, very much hope that you've enjoyed. We've had a lot of fun. Grant, any final words from you?
No.
Martin, give us something golden.
I've put the do not disturb thing on my door and I've got a black light to check for stains.
What more can we say? Save the bees. That's all we can say. Everybody, thank you so much for joining in. We'll see you next time. This is Neutral Cider Hotel checking out.